There's always two sides to every game. Welcome to the Game of Two Halves podcast with Tom Tozer and Chris McManus.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Game of Two Halves podcast. I'm Tom Tozer.
And I'm Chris McManus.
And on today's show, we're going to be speaking to Dave Bricknell, who's a youth scout at Tottenham Hotspur. We've also got our first paper review of David Matthews, journalist who's written in papers like The Guardian and The Observer.
So, as Tom said, first up we've got Dave Bricknell. He is a Tottenham scout and he is a coach for a number of teams and does a lot within the footballing from young ages all the way up till about 16, 17. So here it is.
Dave, thanks for taking your time out to join us on the Game of Two Halves podcast. First things first, how are you coping in lockdown?
Bored. Really bored. I work in a secondary school, so we're not gathering in. Although I just had a message today, so we might hear something next week about the 2nd of June. But the job I do is I'm not a teacher. The job I do, I'm not sure if I'll be asked to go in because they want to keep the teachers and the kids to a minimum there.
Yeah.
So, and then all the coaching I do has all been stopped. The scouting stopped, the coaching stopped.
So no idea as to when that's going to be kicking back up again?
No, although I've just been sent a text saying that Matt Hancock's wants grassroots football back as soon as possible. So,
yeah.
Right, okay.
Sky Sports earlier.
Was it? Yeah. So hopefully we can get back. As long as it's safe, as long as they're safe, then it'll be nice. I think everyone, I've had so many phone calls from people that the kids are driving them up the wall where they're sat inside. I mean, We've had a great 8 weeks weather as well, haven't we? Let's be fair.
They've been a bit of better time, but could have been a better time. Yeah.
So we've had a great weather. It'd been really nice if we could have done some football, but health comes first, I suppose. So you can't knock it too much.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think Dave. So kind of give our viewers kind of an overview of what you do as in your scouting role, kind of predominantly what your day-to-day or what your week-to-week kind of schedule looks like, what you're looking for.
Right. Okay. Well, I look after the Essex. So I've got a team of nine scouts, including myself, that we try and cover as much as Essex grassroots football as we possibly can.
I can see Chris's eyes lighting up.
Yeah. So, that West Ham are there as well, so don't panic. It's quite funny because a lot of the times you run into all the different scouts and we all know each other. Most of the kids know, most of the teams know all the kids. It's very hard to hide someone these days. And then it's just trying to persuade them to come to you rather than go to West Ham or Arsenal or Chelsea, really. But we try and cover as many games. We try and work out what teams are normally the strongest, because they're the best ones to look at first. You look at the district sides, the county sides, a couple of teams. I mean, we're not supposed to look at under sixes. We don't look at under sixes at Tottenham, unless they fall in your lap. But most other teams in London, they go after the under sixes. So we normally start a year behind, to be honest. So that's the thing, but we go from under six all the way up to under 16s, really what we look for.
So I read an article online, I think, about Harry Kane.
Yeah.
He was, when he was first spotted, he was touted as a little bit of a good goalkeeper, I saw.
Well, he was, when he was playing for us, what happened was, I mean, I've said the story many times, he came over with the first training session and we had a couple of boys there and we was doing little bits and pieces. And we said, we'll do some shooting because all kids like doing shooting. And I said, have we got a goalkeeper here? And then somebody's little kid puts his hand up and says, I'll go in goal. So I said, great. So he goes in goal and the boy starts shooting at him. And he's flicking the ball, he's diving to his right, he's diving to his left, he's knocking the balls over. And I think he was seven at the time. And to get a goalkeeper to do that at seven, you think, God, I've got a goalkeeper. Because I don't know if you know, but grassroots teams, they never get a goalkeeper. You always get the they have to take it in turns a lot of the time. It's very rare you get goalkeepers come along. So I thought, great, I've got a goalkeeper. And then this woman come down to me and she said, Dave, he's not a goalie. I went, I thought it was his mum, to be honest with you. I just thought, busy mother, you know, got a goalkeeper. She doesn't want her kid playing in goal and standing there and doing nothing. But it weren't the mum, it was a friend. I said, oh, okay, where's he playing? Oh, he's good out on pitch. I said, okay, well, we'll pack him out on pitch. He went out on pitch and he could score for fun. So that was it. We were the goalkeeper no more. But he liked playing in goal. He could play in goal. He was a good goalkeeper.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a story. And he actually was at Arsenal, when he was at Arsenal.
Oh, so he was there. Yeah, I've always heard this rumour. I want to put this to bed. Who's he support?
He supports Spurs now.
Maybe does.
He supports Spurs now. And but he went to Arsenal because the training ground at Arsenal is right near to where we used to play our games, which is at, name's gone.
Well, the training ground, is that London Colney?
No, I was trying to, Howell End, they're at Howell End.
Oh, right, yeah.
And we used to play our matches next door. Douglas. Oh, my brain's gone. Anyway, so we used to play, and then we had the Arsenal scouts used to come over, and they see Harry, and they see a boy called Nico Yanaris as well, who made it. He played for Arsenal as well.
Yeah.
Now he's in China. And they asked them to come over. So they went over to Arsenal. Harry was there for a couple of years. But they had a boy called Benneke Fobi there. Do you know, Benneke plays for, well, I think he's at Bournemouth now, or whatever he's gone to. And when he was younger, he was absolutely unbelievable. He was fantastic. And I suppose they looked at it and went, he's the better option. And they decided to keep Benneke rather than Harry. You know, in the end, you see how it's, and that's the thing with scouting. I don't know what your question is going to be later on, but, you know, someone's made a decision when a boy's 11 that this boy is going to be better. And, you know, Benneke Fobi's had a great career out of football, but Harry's had a better one.
Yeah, that was kind of a question I wanted to come on to. Like, I imagine the scouting business and then get the footballers as they're younger is quite a cutthroat business. It is kind of a decision there and then. You might give this person better than this person.
Yeah.
Take this person.
Well, the thing is, I've always tried to say, when I take a boy to Tottenham, I'll say to the parent, you've got to realise it's someone's opinion. And that is all it is. Both my boys went through the systems, both didn't make it. And if you go in there thinking your boy's going to smash it, even if he's so, so good at a year early age, there's a good chance he's going to come a cropper. You've got to realise you're only there, because as you said, it's very cutthroat. Your boy's only there until someone better comes along. And that's the way, and if you think about it, that's the way it has to be.
Yeah.
Because with you, Chris, you support West Ham, you want the best players at West Ham.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you've got, for instance, Mark Noble's been there for however long Mark Noble's been at West Ham.
Yeah.
If you get a chance to get a better version of Mark Noble, you as a supporter wants that, don't they?
Yeah.
It's the same as the kids. You know, your kid could be, you could be doing really, really well, but if all of a sudden, a year or so's time, the body shape goes, because as you know, going up through your teens, boys are all over the shop, aren't they? You get some kids that are 6 foot at 12, you know, and they're smashing it because they're just bigger, stronger, faster. And then you get the littler boys that are technically normally better, not always, but normally better, and they come good at 16, 17. But sometimes that's just too late.
And in terms of how you watch players, so you said about you saw Harry Kane and then he went to Arsenal, but did you keep sort of tabs on players when they go to other teams? And
well, I never scouted Harry for Tottenham. What happened with Harry was he left us. I knew Harry from Ridgeway and then at the district, and he went into Arsenal. Then he got released and he went and played with his mates at a different team, Gladstone. And then he came into Tottenham. He got seen at Gladstone by another scout. I know the family, of course, but you do lose. You can't get every single kid. It's impossible to track every single kid.
Yeah.
And then he went into Tottenham, I think, and Watford. I think Watford wanted to sign him and we didn't. And then he played for Watford against Tottenham, I think, and scored a hat-trick. And then Spurs said, yeah, we want him. Okay. And bigger fish eat smaller fish, didn't they? So, you know, I suppose if you I don't mean to be rude to Watford, you know, it's like if a kid at 14 looks at Tottenham or Man United, for instance, a lot more kids would say that Man United are a bigger club.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, and that's just the way it is. You go where you think he's going to be best for your son, but you try and get him to the highest level as possible. Doesn't always work out that way, and some of them come the other way, and they come up via the Brentfords and the Orients, and they get seen at 15, 16, and that works out well for them.
Yeah. And in terms of, you said about earlier about trying to persuade them to come to Tottenham, how would that situation work?
What we do is, I mean, have you ever been to Tottenham's training ground?
I haven't, no.
Right. I've been to the old, not to the new.
The new one is unbelievable. It is. Whatever team you support, and because I take quite a few grassroots teams in there to play in festivals, and no matter what team the parents support, they're all blown away at the place.
Yeah.
So that's one way of selling it. Another way is the fact is that we do get kids through the academy to go on and play for the first team.
Yeah.
And then you just got to try and persuade them that that's the best club, the best place for them. And then the coaching, you rely a lot on the coaching, because you as a dad, a lot of kids now, but pre-academy from like 6 till 9, do you know when they get signed?
No, that's a good question.
So they get signed at under 9. They can play for their grassroots teams up to under 9, and they can go to as many development centres as they want. So if you've got a kid and he's good enough, he could be going to West Ham, Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham, Watford. They've got to be within an hour of the training ground, so you can't live further than an hour away. Okay. So you could take your kid to 5 different academies.
Yeah.
And then you're going to make a decision what you think is best for your son. And then it's up to us to persuade you that Tottenham's the best for your son.
Yeah.
And we try and do it in the passage, the club, the training they're going to get, the development for your boy. Mm-hmm. And we all try and do the same.
You mentioned earlier about, obviously, Matt Hancock mentioned today that obviously that there's a possibility we want grassroots football back as soon as possible. Do you think with everything that's gone on, that's going to change the landscape of the way scouting's carried out now?
To be honest with you, we're not sure. You must have been just bugging my phone because we had a conversation. There's a scout I talked to quite a lot, John Sawyer, who works for West Ham.
Okay.
And we speak quite a lot. And we were saying how it's all going to work, because the thing is as well now is that, because a lot of people might lose their job and everything, and you know, if people with money's scarce, parents are going to decide what they're going to spend their money on. So you could get the cases like, I do a lot of work with a team called Ryan FC in East London. It's quite a massive club in East London. And we're getting, I don't know, 15, 16 boys a year getting into academies for all different ages. But you're getting them from all different parts of London. But some of the parents won't be able to afford to pay for them next year.
No.
And then also the costs involved. I mean, the person that runs Ryan, he's already been asked for £10,000 for training this year for the forthcoming season. We don't know when that's going to start.
Yeah.
There's no subs been taken in yet. Because of what's happened, there's been no summer tournaments, and I don't know if you played for it when you was younger, but if you did, you know that there's a summer tournament programme that is invaluable to most grassroots clubs, because that's where they get a lot of their money from.
Yeah.
That's where we do a lot of scouting as well, because they're all in one place. So we've missed out on a lot of boys in the summer.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know how it's going to change. I mean, it could be that we start... We do a lot more festivals at Tottenham than we used to. So we're making more use of the facility. So we invite a lot, you know, we might do an under eight festival. We invite 10 teams down and have a little festival of football. They'll play each other at the training ground. And you have five or six different scouts there. And we just all make notes. And then if the same boy gets picked out by all five scouts or something, then we might invite him in. You know, it's easier than going, you know, on a Sunday, traipsing all over Essex, trying to locate the next Harry Kane. You know, but we do the both. You have to put in the hours, and you've got to try and see as many teams as you possibly can, and you've got to try and make friends with as many different managers as you can, because some managers and some clubs don't like you there, because they want to win the league, and they don't want to lose their best player. You know what I mean? So, you know, there's agendas by everybody. Some of the managers are brilliant, but you do go some places and the manager's going, well, I ain't telling you his name. Or, no, you can't speak to him. And you go, fair enough.
I've picked up on a point you said about looking for the next Harry Kane. In that sense, obviously before everything happened and football stopped, was there anybody, obviously you said you read from about sixes up to about 16, 17s. Is there anybody in around the 16, 17 age area that you think, yeah, they'll make it, they'll get to the first team, or they'll go on to greater things? Is there anybody that we should be looking out for?
Well, hopefully, yeah, because there's three this year that boys I've taken in when they was younger. So hopefully they get a chance. There's a boy called Dennis Serkin, who's a left back at Tottenham.
Familiar. Yeah.
I used to coach him for Ridgeway years and years back, and he went into Tottenham. He's done exceptionally well, and I've heard that he's well thought of by the manager. There's a boy, Malachi Fagan-Walcott, he's an under 18. He's just got his pro at Tottenham. I took him into Tottenham when he was 14. He was one of the later ones. There are some very, very good footballers out there. The thing is, it's hard because there's so many unknowns in football. For instance, when Harry was going through at Tottenham, there was a boy called Paul McBride that came in from my team as well to Tottenham. And superb winger, brilliant footballer. He don't play the game no more because when he was a scholar, he done his ACL. And then they put him in and gave him an extra year. And when he come back, Carl Walker was doing some extra defensive training, and Carl Walker caught him on the knee when he was going past him and done his ACL again, so he's actually retired. He's never played football since. So no matter, there's so many different things in football where you're not sure. There's a boy called Marcus Edwards. Don't you know Marcus?
Yeah, I've seen Marcus.
He's in
Portugal now.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Well, if you'd have seen him as a kid, you'd have put your house, your mortgage, your mum and dad's house, your uncle's and aunt's house on him being a pro at Tottenham.
Well, I've always wondered what happened with him. Like,
well, I couldn't tell you exactly what happened, but what will probably happen is there's a saying that says, what is it? Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
Okay.
And the big problem with academies, in my opinion, is from age of 8 or 9, these kids are getting told how great they are. And if they go all the way to the top, they're just being told they're great, they're great, they're great, they're great. But they need to be rounded as well. You know, so if you're getting told you're great all the time, unless you're really determined to make something, you think, well, I don't need to work as hard now because I'm being told I'm great. And this step up from academy football to scholarship football, then from scholarship football to professional football is massive. I mean, I never made it pro. I didn't even get, you know, I didn't get in there. But I know people that have, and I've taken kids in that have, and they'll tell you the step up is unreal. I mean, I played vets for Spurs with people that were even older than me. And you can't believe that, but it was older than me. But they're touch even now, and ex-pros, it's unreal. They are so good.
Yeah.
Determinate, and I think the difference is of making it, a lot of it is the dedication and your attitude to wanting to do it. You need the talent as well, but you need that, but you also need a lot of luck as well.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing, something you said about the dedication and the actual passion to do it. It's like everyone talks about the Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo, the fact that he's had to work for it.
Yeah.
From day one, he's worked for it throughout his whole career. Even now, he's working solid every day, and he's done that from the start. And it's a mindset more than an actual talent.
You make a good point, Chris, because I think we had Paul Konchesky on a couple of weeks ago. And
nice bloke, Paul. Lovely bloke.
Lovely bloke. We had Paul on a couple of weeks ago, and we asked him the question, I think many people would have been asked, Messi or Ronaldo, and I think he made a great point of Ronaldo is that class above Messi because he's not just done it in one place, he's worked hard and done it in a lot of different places.
Again, it's that's what the greatest thing about football, it's all about opinions.
Yeah. What's your opinion on that split?
Me personally, I think Messi's naturally a better footballer. I think Ronaldo's worked hard at it. I love watching Messi. I think I watched him at Wembley a couple of years ago. I think he touched the ball about 8 times against us, scored 2, hit the post, set up a goal.
Yeah, I remember that game.
No, and you couldn't get near him. The thing is, because I'll probably never see it again, I went specifically to watch Messi. Now, there was 84,000 over Wembley, I think, and Tottenham got spanked. We made it. We only lost 4-2. Wow, it was
4-2,
wasn't it? Yeah. How we only lost 4-2 was unreal. And he ruined us completely. And he didn't move. He just does little spurts. He does 5-yard spurts and then doesn't do nothing for 5 minutes. And he destroyed us. And it's the only time I've ever come away from Tottenham really after we've really been smashed. And everyone just said, and that, no one was slagging Tottenham off. Oh my God, sorry, that was happening there. Terry just come on. And then we walked away, and everyone's going, what can you do? The keys is just magic. He was just brilliant.
Yeah.
So no one slagged Tottenham off. And you know what football fans are like. We're all fickle. We all come out going, oh, wow, we lost that. But he was just brilliant. To me, he's the best. But if you said, would you like Ronaldo on your team? I'd say yes.
I think we'd all be saying, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah. But there's another use about dedication. I went for a walk yesterday and there's the goalkeeper at Spurs, under 16 goalkeeper, Aaron Maguire, who I took him when he was 11 and he was over the park. And I went over yesterday and he's by himself in the park with his pods in, right, doing doggies, practicing his kicking with his left and his right foot, you know, working hard, testing himself, sit up, squats, everything. And I'm thinking, brilliant. And he said the same thing. He said, the thing is, David, I said, you know, what made you, Al? Because he wasn't the best goalkeeper when he went across there. Yeah. Probably the bravest goalkeeper, but not the best. He said, the thing is, David, he said, the security guys have to kick me out. He said, because I'll stay behind after and work harder.
Yeah.
And that's like Ronaldo done it, Beckham done it.
Yeah.
All, you know, I'm not saying that Aaron will go on and have, you know, hopefully he does, but you don't know if he'll go on and make it. But he's giving himself the best opportunity to make it.
Yeah, I think that was fantastic. We've heard a lot of great insights into the scouting system, how it works, and hopefully going forward, hopefully it doesn't change too much the
dynamic
of it. So especially for you, if you don't change dynamic and from perspective, keep scouting the good players because we just want to get better and better as a club. Maybe
exactly. Well, I'll do my best, honestly.
Push the ones that don't get there, just push them to West Ham. That'll be fine. We'll take that out. We'll have that all day long. Dave, we really appreciate you taking your time out to talk to us on the game.
That's brilliant.
And we hope to speak to you again very, very soon.
No problem, Tom. Just give us a shout if you need to, all right?
No problem.
Thanks for your time. Thanks for inviting us on as well. It's been a pleasure.
No worries. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Cheers, Chris. All the best, mate.
Cheers.
All new irons. All the best. Ta-da.
Cheers, mate. Bye-bye. Fantastic interview there with Dave, Chris. I think it was really good to get an insight into the scouting network and how things work from a young age. It was really interesting to see some of the players that he's brought through. Obviously, from a biased perspective, it's good to see there's players coming through at Tottenham, like Dennis Shirkin, Malachi Faith and Walcott are, I've heard of both upcoming players. So that was really, really interesting to hear. And it's good to hear that he gets around the county in Essex, getting to a lot of youth teams and looking for players.
Yeah, it was a really good interview. And I like, so in our last podcast, or the one before last with Paul, we were talking about the how players are going to come through youth academies and how COVID is going to affect that. And it's good to get the other side where he's saying that actually it might not happen that way because some of these smaller clubs aren't going to have the finances to continue, and some could actually, even down to sort of the parents paying for their kids to go to the football teams and paying the substitutes and things like that. It's a really good insight to the other side of it and how COVID is going to affect that as well.
Yeah, it was quite good to hear from him as well. That I think obviously Matt Hancock said in the week that grassroots football is kind of ready to restart, obviously in a safe way. So it was really good to hear that as well. Guys, we'll move on to our second part today. So first time this week, and we're going to be running this weekly, it's our paper review. And we had journalist David Matthews, who was kind enough to jump on a paper review with us this week. Hi guys, welcome to the first paper review on A Game of Two Halves. This week we have David Matthews. David, thanks for taking the time out to join us on a paper review this week. How are you getting on?
Yeah, I'm good. Pleasure to be here.
Good stuff. So I think we'll jump right into it. I picked up a couple of papers this week. I think a big topic I wanted to talk about was something across a couple of the back pages. So what I've got here in the Daily Mirror is from Danny Rose. We're being treated like lab rats. I think this is on another podcast. He had an interview and basically said, felt that the Premier League players are being treated like lab rats for basically to go back to training. I mean, David, I think what are your thoughts on that initially?
Well, I think in some ways, Danny Rose is reflecting the opinion of a lot of people in wider society, I guess, insofar as the whole treatment of the pandemic in this country by the government, big business and what have you, it's been a little bit, how can I say this, diplomatically, sort of like off track, let's say. And, it's a family show, so I'll keep my language suitably muted. But I've got a lot of respect for Danny Rose. I am, cards on the table, Spurs support. I think that he's one of the few players at the moment, certainly, who, talks about quite potentially controversial or sort of edgy subjects with some thought. And I think he's right to voice the concerns for players who must be thinking that their well-being, the well-being of their families, obviously they're young guys, many of them have got, young families, and they're not immune from this stuff, as a number of positive tests just in the past 24 hours among Premier League players have shown. So I've got some sympathy for him, and my personal feeling is I don't really see how the Premier League can conclude in a way this season that suits everybody, and I think it's a bit unfair to try to push it. They've been coming with a lot of ideas one after the other, trying to make this thing happen. And I think whether it's in practice or even just through the way that they've been communicating, a plethora of ideas, I think that players and fans, for that matter, by extension, have been treated with a little bit of disrespect, I think.
Yeah, I wanted to pick up on another point within that. I saw Troy Deeney has said that he's not going to go back to training. There's been other people that have said... I think it may have been Gary Neville who said, if players don't go back, then they shouldn't be paid. Now, in my personal opinion, I don't think that's right. I mean, Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, with the Troy Deeney situation, I can understand why he's saying it, because he's got a 5-month-old child who has breathing difficulties, it is, and that's why he said, I'm not going back, because he doesn't want to put his son at risk about bringing anything into the house and things like that. So I could completely understand where he's come from. And he's actually said, I don't, if you don't want to pay me, don't. But he's actually got the, I read an article yesterday, and it was saying about how he's actually got the backing of several other players at Watford. So there's at least 7 or 8 players that aren't playing for Watford who are in a relegation battle, and we continue with bringing the Premier League back, it's just going to cause an absolute lot of hassle for the club as a whole, because that could end up them being relegated, a lot of internal battles within their captain saying that he's not going to play, not going to train. It's just
going I mean, David, is it right? Is it right for people to be saying if they're not going to go back and train or play, that they should be paid?
I don't think that they should be threatened in that way, because, you know, contractually, are they obligated to perform under such, as we keep hearing, you know, unprecedented conditions? I don't think that they should be. And I think forcing them into a position that, you know, let's face it, and being ultra cynical about it, it's ultimately about money. I understand and I appreciate that a lot of people within football and outside of it have lost a hell of a lot of money as a result of the shutdown of professional football due to the pandemic. Sorry, let me say that again.
That's
right. We can go again with that one. So, yeah, I think that ultimately it's about money, and that, you know, the Premier League wants to get going again because a lot of people have lost a lot of money that are connected to the professional game. One thing that I think should be considered, even with bringing football back behind closed doors, which, you know, let's face it, the nature of playing the game threatens the health and safety of the players themselves, because, you know, they're sweating, you know, they're spitting, they're in close contact with each other. I mean, you know, you can take the fans out of the stadium, but you can't take people out of it. Grounds have to be secured and protected. That means a lot of, you know, key worker type sort of staff in there coming and going anyway. And then on top of that, they've been forced into a situation where they could well be encouraging a lot of errant behaviour outside of the ground. How they're going to stop people from congregating at grounds, and that's not even the, you know, that's not even the worst of it. People are going to congregate at home in big numbers to watch televised games. Let's face it, that's going to happen. How do you stop that? So I think Danny saying what he's saying is actually, you know, putting a serious issue on the table, because it might be theoretically possible, but I think in practice it's still set to be a disaster.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing here is, as long as it's safe for everybody, players, management, all staff, fans, as long as it's all safe, then it can come back. But at this moment in time, with the different things that are happening, I think we can all agree we don't see. Oh, it's weird, because you can't say we don't see football coming back, because obviously with the phase training now, it looks like it will be coming back, but we just want to see it back in the best way possible. I'm going to move on to something a little bit lighter. This is actually something that started before lockdown ensued. It's Man City's potential European ban. They were this week given a court date for their ban of June 8th to the 10th. I want to start with you, David, about when this, the first news came out, I think it was maybe in January, February, that this could potentially ban City from Europe for 2 years. What were your initial thoughts around that?
Well, again, you know, from a totally biased position, I thought, no, please, no. Because the way that certainly Spurs form was going and the season was panning out, you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah. Yeah.
That other club was certainly set or in a very good position to capitalise and benefit from City being banned. I think, again, the problem is, and, you know, look, we don't want to blame everything on COVID-19. However, I think that the circumstances as they are also make that decision very difficult, because European football, you know, the Champions League, the Europa League, I mean, that's up in the air now. So what, you know, how would that ban play out? I mean, imagine if they're banned for like two truncated or sort of, you know, abridged seasons anyway. That's like sort of saying, well, you know, you're banned from driving, but I don't know, you're in jail anyway. So what difference does that make? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I mean, so I think in a way, maybe I would have liked to have seen that perhaps sort of stall a little bit longer.
Yeah. Chris, do you think City are in danger of losing some of their prize players? If I think if it's 1 year, they may be okay, but if it's held up for 2 years, do you think some of their better players are in danger of leaving?
I think it's not just the players, but if you look at Pep Guardiola and what he's achieved at Man City as well, they could end up losing Pep, and that will be a massive loss for them, because he wants to win the Champions League at City. I think that is very obvious in the way he's set up this season, the Premier League compared to the Champions League. He's won every trophy there is to win in England. So now he wants to battle Europe with City. So if they're banned for 2 years, is he going to stay and wait until after that? And how's he going to build the team to win it when they're allowed back in it? Because as you said, players, even now, there's world-class players on City's bench that aren't going to look in, because they're such a good squad. They haven't got just the 11 good men. They've got a good squad, and they need that for Champions League. And if there is no European football for them, then they're going to be looking elsewhere where they can play different, like actually play. I saw a tweet or a post on Instagram for something that Dana Payu said, and he said he'd rather play every week for Watford then sit on the bench for Barcelona. And I think that is a lot to say for footballers. They actually want to be playing, some of them, and they're with City, they will be losing players if they get knocked out.
Yeah, I think it's hard, because you hear what you hear on the TV, you read what you read in the papers, and you read it online, and City, in my personal opinion, they've done wrong. And it kind of felt like as soon as this was released and as soon as this was out, they immediately got their back up. They immediately got their back up and said, no, we've not done anything wrong. We're going to fight this. We're going to fight this. We're going to fight it. And that, as probably would anybody do, even if they were in the wrong. However, from evidence you've seen and from what they've said on online or on TV, I feel like it's the ban will be upheld, whether it's just 1 or 2 years. It's just a matter of time, just to see whether it's going to be a 1 or 2 year ban. Yeah. David, I think you had something we discussed earlier in the week that you wanted to talk about, I think it was.
Yeah, let me see. What was it now? Because there were a few things. Well, one obviously was the Danny Rose thing that we covered already. I mean, something else actually that's cropped up that the papers, of course, have been discussing over the past couple of days, not least because the clubs themselves are starting to communicate with fans, is this whole issue over season tickets and and refunds. I don't know if I'm throwing a sort of curveball in there.
No, I agree. I see something today about I think about Wimbledon. Wimbledon fans who have begged the supporters not to ask for refunds for their season tickets. I think it's 3,500 fans have been asked not to ask for refunds because obviously it will have the money that they will lose out on from that. So yeah.
Yeah, I thought I'd just mention that because I got just today an email from Tottenham Hotspur, where I've got a couple of season tickets, and they have, you know, given season ticket holders the option of course, taking monies owed forward as credits, or cashing them in. Now, what you're saying about Wimbledon, I think will stand for a lot of clubs. You know, people are going to look at the economic situation and they're going to say, you know what, is there even going to be football next season or the season after, for that matter, in the kind of form that accommodates fans as it used to be? So I think a lot of fans will reason, you know what, I'm cashing out. And they'll take the money, and that's going to have serious implications, excuse me, for many clubs, of course. I think that it's interesting that Spurs have kind of gone onto the front foot with this and been quite proactive, given that, of course, they had a few stumbles earlier in the season with their public relations. Perhaps that's an indication as well of a degree of financial stability there. I mean, you never know what the politics is with these clubs when they're using things that are, you know, related to football but off the pitch as some form of kind of bargaining tool or some form of coded message. Are they saying, well, look, we don't need the money, so you can have it back if you want? Whereas other clubs, we've seen Man U as what they've just tabled debts of like something like 450 million. That's, you know, that's sending a very different message across.
Yeah. Yeah, like you said, obviously, I think, and today Man United announced loss to the last quarter as well. So I think you can see that what this is affecting football clubs right from the bottom end of the spectrum right through to the top end of the spectrum. So, like you said, will it return to what we know for fans next season, the season after? We don't know. I want to move on to something in Europe. Quite interesting. Again, from coming off of what we've just spoken about, I see an article in The Sun. It says bargains. So it's saying that Barcelona are basically putting their squad up for auction, aside from three players, Messi, Frenkie de Jong, and Marc-Andre ter Stegen. So I think that's quite interesting to see that these clubs are looking to bring in money by selling their players. But then you look at it in another perspective. If they're looking to bring in money, what all the rest of the clubs are going to be looking to bring in money? So, Chris, my question is, do you think they're looking to recoup around about 550 million here? Do you think they will recoup that?
With the squad that they've got, they could definitely recoup that. And I think this is going to be a big trend throughout all leagues. With what has happened, the transfer window is going to be one of the craziest, especially when there's, if you look at like the likes of Newcastle, they're going through the buyout, so they're going to have a lot of money to spend. But then other clubs like, who I support, West Ham, probably on the back scale, we made a loss last year, and then we're not making any money at the moment. We're losing money at the moment. So the players like Diop and Declan Rice, could they end up going because of the financial side of things? It could be taken out of managers' hands. And I think that's going to be very controversial in terms of managers aren't going to have a choice at the moment in terms of who goes and who comes in.
Yeah, I think that, David, I think Chris has echoed something there quite important. I think we if you agree, we may see a big change in transfer markets whereby we'll see a lot more big money moves now, I think, because of... not more big money moves or big player moves, I should say, because there are teams that are going to try and recoup money that they've lost under the pandemic.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you've triggered what I was going to what I was going to talk about initially, and that's the aesthetic of this fanless era of football that we're moving into, based on what we saw last weekend with the return of the Bundesliga. And I say that and neatly bringing these two points together, because of course big footballers have big egos, and if they're playing in whacking great big stadiums to nobody, and the feedback that they start getting, which, let's face it, I mean, from what I saw of the Bundesliga last week, boy, oh boy, I mean, I've seen, you know, two old ladies fighting in a pub car park. More stimulating than that. I mean, it's incredible that when you put something like football or anything on a massive scale and take the fans out of it, it becomes, you know, not a spectacle. And I think for a lot of players, if they look around and they start seeing other leagues, perhaps in sort of, you know, let's for argument say, in the States or in the Far East, where they're going to pay good money, they're going to have perhaps a far more cavalier attitude and bring fans back in sooner rather than later. You know, those players might think, do you know what, at least for a season or two, I'm out of here. I'll go and play in the MLS, you know, or the Chinese, you know, whatever league it's going to be when it gets its act together. So, you know, I think it is a major concern.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's difficult because I find it so difficult to talk about how football goes forward from here. And because no one knows. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Nobody knows what's being decided. And at the end of the day, I think there's a lot of it being spoken about. Oh, it's the Premier League making these decisions. But at the end of the day, it's the government's choice. Everyone's saying it's come down to the Premier League. But Chris, I think ultimately at the end of the day, it comes down to the government's choice and what the government wants to do.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the problem as well, because even if you look at how the Premier League, the whole of the English league is being decided at the moment, it's very all over the place. There's no structure to it. Because today, League Two now being done points per game average. So that might mean that Stevenage is going to get relegated. And in terms of the government, it's down to them. If there's a second peak, what's going to happen then to the Premier League? And is it just going to stop again and wait?
You rolled into my last point I want to bring on in our paper review. It was something that came up today, which was the League One and League Two situation. Now, David, obviously, like Chris just said, League Two are going into a points per game ratio. Now we're just going to see Stevenage relegated. I mean, is this a fair way to decide promotion, relegation, playoffs, or is there another way? Do we just declare it null and void and just restart again next season? I feel like if you're relegating these teams, yes, okay, there are teams that have had outstanding seasons and are in high positions, but then the teams that have had poor seasons and the ones that aren't in the relegation zone are now being punished for a points per game ratio.
I couldn't agree with you more. And again, you know, I must stress that I've got an obvious bias here, but I think that aside, and as many of us, I'm sure, you know, both of you would agree, early on when this pandemic was first getting going, I think a lot of us were joking about, you know, the consequences that it would have on the Liverpools, on, dare I say, the West Hams as well. And we were sort of exerting our kind of biases in a very sort of, you know, comical manner. As this has dragged on and it hasn't gone anywhere and it's become more and more problematic for government, for industries like you know, professional football, it's become apparent that, you know what, there is whatever idea is or alternative for kind of settling things like league positions, Champions League places, and what, it's just fraught with difficulty. And I think that, you know, the right and proper thing is to just draw a line under it, as many people will do with 2020 period. Let's just declare the year null and void.
I've already got my I'm ready for 2021 banner in my house. That's all ready to go.
I'll go for that. And I think the other thing as well, in all seriousness, even if clubs benefit from a bit of a, I don't want to say jiggery pokery, but, you know, moving pieces around the board and making clubs, you know, get promoted or relegated as a result of some sort of, like, you know, backroom mathematical deal, what's it going to look like next season, you know? And again, for the season after that, I mean, how many people are going to afford to be able to go on European sort of like junkets to watch sort of teams, even if they can do that. Again, I think the spectacle is going to be, quite frankly, a lot more muted. I think for one now, I mean, do I really care about Spurs being in Europe next season? Not really now, I've got to say.
I think we can all agree, to kind of wrap up the paper review, I think we can all agree that although we're all here for a reason, for a podcast, to talk about what we love, I think we can agree that the safety of everybody is a paramount. Dave, that's all for the paper review this week. Thanks for taking your time out to talk to us, and we will see you again next week.
Great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Cheers, David. Thanks a lot. I thanks to David Matthews for taking part in the paper review this week. We'll be back again next week with David to review some. It's an important point I want to pick up on what Dave, and we all mentioned actually, is about players having their wages deducted from if they refuse to play. Now, some of them are refusing to play because of their own personal health and safety reasons. I mean, I don't think that's right. I mean, they shouldn't have their wages taken off them, should they?
No, not at all. At the end of the day, they are protecting themselves and their family. As we discussed, Troy Deeney, with his little boy, he has health problems, so he's not going to put in his little boy at risk, and I completely understand it. And since we actually recorded that episode, or that part of this episode, Kante's come out and he's now training from home because of his safe thoughts about the safety, and Lampard's actually given him the backing of that, and I think that's a really good approach to have. And with the second round of testing, I've seen that Bournemouth have a player that's got COVID, tested positive this weekend. So there is, it is in the footballing world, and the fact that they're expecting, as Troy Deeney said, he can't go get his hair cut, but he can stand in a box with 19 other men. And there are players being tested positive, so I can completely understand where they are coming from.
Well, like everything we've discussed over the first few episodes of A Game of Two Halves, we're just going to have to wait and see what develops and what comes of it. Our thanks to Dave Bricknell and Dave Matthews again for this week's show. Next week's show, we've got Marlon King interviewing with us, so we're looking very much forward to that. For now, guys, if you've got anything that you want us to talk about, please like and subscribe on the YouTube. Get in contact with us via Instagram, Facebook, send us what you need to, anything you'd like us to talk about. Any questions you have for Marlon King that you want to put forward, just let us know. For now, guys, it's bye from me.
Bye from me. Thanks for your time.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.